This is the Nassaman Hockey Podcast with James Nichols and John Zella.
All right, so here's the thing. I know that we usually get to On the Island later, and we're going to get to On the Island later, but I have to get this out of the way right now because it's just been bugging me literally all day, and I don't even know how this happened, but I don't know. Somebody asked me if they should start questioning Lou Lamoriello, and I was like, no, too early. Like, we've been to two playoff series, not even series. We've been to the playoffs twice under his regime.
In both years, one playoff rounds,
got deeper every round. And then the conversation took a turn, and they started talking about JG Pageau. And listen, okay, before I go any further, look, I love my followers. Thank you for following me. I appreciate you. I'm not putting anybody out. It was not just one person. But why? Why on earth are we questioning JG Pageau? Like, no, they didn't spend too much money on him. Yes, he's been worth every penny. That's pretty much my motto at this point. He's definitely the second best Islander on the team because I don't see anybody performing better than him. He is worth $6 million a year. The first and second round pick we paid for him, I would do it 10 out of 10 times. The third round pick, I don't even care about. Can we stop? Can we stop? I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm offended. Not really offended, but on behalf of Pageau, I'm offended. Okay? He's the second best Islander on the team. Can we stop? That's just my opinion. Am I wrong?
I mean, we can definitely dive into it a little bit later. He's definitely, I mean, and I think he likes being in this role a little bit, right? Like, he's not the main guy. He's not Barzal.
He's not
even Lee, right? He doesn't get the recognition right that the rest, you know, and I think he kind of quietly plays that third line role. He knows his role on the team, and he's really been, I can't believe he has 7 goals this season.
Let me riddle you this, okay? Today, as you're listening to this, is the 1-year anniversary of the acquisition. We got JG Pageau 1 year ago. Today, as you're listening to this, look out for my article. It's coming. I'll give you all the facts in there. He's an Islander through and through, not just because he puts the sweater on. He is just the epitome of what the New York Islanders are. He is gritty. He is hardworking. And he does literally everything for this team. Yes, Trotz puts him out there and makes him do it, but that's because he can.
Yeah, he's an elevated Casey Cizikas.
That's a great way to put it.
If Casey Cizikas got power play time. And I feel like Pageau has a little more of a touch that Cizikas doesn't always bring. He definitely has it. We've seen it from him. But Pageau brings it almost every night.
Right.
And that extra gear of speed.
Oh, yeah.
That he brings to the table. And we've also seen Cizikas do that. But I think we have.
But he's just slightly better. Maybe not even slightly, a little more than slightly better than Cizikas in all of those aspects. And I love Cizikas as much as the next guy, but I also love Pageau just as much. He is that much better than Cizikas. He is consistently, since he's been an Islander, up in the mix of points with the top line. After Eberle, after Lee, and after Barzal, it has always been him since he's been on the team. So let's stop with this silly narrative that JG Pageau cost us Devin Toews. They couldn't afford to go get a goal scorer because of him. No, they got who they needed. Lest you forget, there was a black hole of the third line before they got him. He's brought stability to this lineup, and he is just, he was so necessary for this roster. And I'm gonna end it there because this was, I can't even believe I had to do this.
Yeah, we can talk more about the lineup when we get to,
yeah, we'll talk more about the
later in the show, because I do like this conversation and I did not expect this, so
yeah,
I'm excited about it.
I've been thinking about it all day and I was like, oh man, I can't wait till later. I can get that off my chest. But for now, hey John, what's up? How you doing?
Doing all right. It's been an up and down week all around, hockey and otherwise, so
yeah,
happy to be here and doing this thing and being able to kind of clear my mind a little bit. It's, you know, I definitely see what you're doing and just kind of like this cathartic dump where, you know, we have this platform, we can just
yeah,
do our thing and get it off your chest. And then, you know, after the show, we just feel better. We had everything out. And it's like when you write an article, it's I do enjoy that, but there's something very different about what we do here.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. If you're one of those people who tweeted at me, and I don't think I'm trying to put you out. I'm not mentioning any names. And if you want to talk about it, I'm open to it. But just know my mind is made. You're not changing it. I promise you.
Yeah. I have some thoughts too. And I want to make sure that we get to the important things of the show. And first.
Yeah. First, let's get to Around the Rink, brought to you by DraftKings. And you've heard about, you know, DraftKings before. You've heard us talk about it. The leader in daily fantasy sports, and how payday can come every day by entering their contest with huge cash prizes. This week is jam-packed with action ranging from basketball to golf, and DraftKings has plenty of ways for you to have a front row seat to all of that action. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to all users across all sports. So DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports. And there's no better place to get in on all the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up for DraftKings using code THPN. New users will get free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
You're a big fantasy guy.
I am a big fantasy guy.
You enjoy that. You do some writing. Who do you write for? What's the site?
Fantrax. Yeah, I was with Fantrax. I'm not with them any longer, actually. When I took over my new role at as the editor-in-chief of Isles Blog, I had to step away from Fantrax. But great site. I highly recommend Fantrax. Check them out. They're the most customizable season-long fantasy sports website, in my opinion. They're very good for that, but a little different than DraftKings.
Yeah, no, I obviously it's different, but you're just a big fantasy guy. Who are you starting tonight? What was your lineup? You were going right before we press record.
Yeah, I was looking at in my league, we have a games limit. So I can't play one position too many times. And we have two slots for each position. So two centers, two left wings, etc. And I'm looking at my goaltenders, and I own both tandems for Boston and the Islanders. So we have a maximum of what's 56 plus 56 or 120,
112.
Thank you. I can't math. I'm an English teacher. 112 games max I can play. So I could either start both the Islanders and, Boston goalie tandems every single game of this season. Or I could try and do a mix and match and be like, oh, I kind of like who I have going tonight, Mike Smith against I think it's Ottawa. Oh no, it's Vancouver. So I could either take a risk and be like, all right, I'm gonna lose a start for Semyon Varlamov, or I'm gonna, you know, just make sure that I ride him out for the season and collect as many points from him as possible. It's tricky. It's fun though. This league I'm in is really deep, and it's like legitimately managing a real lineup.
Yeah, listener, I hope you understand that better than I do, because I'm used to like Yahoo Fantasy, and I'm like, oh, I play this guy. I have this guy on my bench. I think he's going to win because they're playing a crappy team. So that was definitely over my head. Whenever I've played fantasy, I'm fourth place and I lose in the second round.
Nice.
I've been doing it for 10 years, maybe. I've never made it past the second round.
Nice.
And I always tried to think I outsmarted the system. It's like, oh, I don't need a Crosby. I'll get Kunitz. Like, I always tried to find the guys that ride shotgun to the main guys. And it gets me like,
listen,
you know, it does me well for the most part. But like when it comes down to it, it never works. That third guy on the line or second guy on the line always falls by the wayside. They get changed out. And yeah, I just wound up losing a bunch of points. So I try to just like cycle through that all season long, and
I'm big on even in regular format, I'm big on goalie tandems, and I'm big on line combinations. So if, like, you know, just for instance, Anthony Cirelli on the Lightning, he's on the first power play unit and he's on the second line, so I'll get him because he'll put up power play points, and he has good line mates because I think Stamkos plays his right wing. So
it is a really good way to learn about the players in the
league. Yeah, very good. My buddy doesn't know anything about hockey. He got a partner for the league that we started a couple of years ago, and now he's pretty deep into it. Like, he knows a lot now.
Yeah, it was almost like when I'd play the NHL series hockey games, you always learned about all these guys.
And yeah.
Even when you started drafting, if you finished, I was a career mode guy. That was my big thing.
Yeah,
so
like
when
that.
You go through and do the drafting thing, you kind of see these guys coming out. After a while, they're just made up names. But for at least a couple of years, it's real players.
So you kind of see prospects and stuff, and like
who's already in your system, and you kind of learn that who's developing. Or I remember I don't know, the last time I played these games, it was like probably Niederreiter was still a prospect. Trying to get him into the actual lineup, and then you're trading. I always love this. Like, I just played the games for so long that there'd be trades in the middle of the season.
Yeah,
and I tried to mimic the trades that happen in real life,
and you
for my team. And it's impossible.
Yeah,
it just never worked.
And then the opposing team, they'll be like, you're nowhere near what we're asking for. And I'm like, awkward, because you did that in real life. So
And then I was playing. I sent you and Joe the videos of I was playing Breakaway 98.
Yeah, you were.
And Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey.
Yeah,
those games are so hard. Breakaway was way easier than Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey for some reason. I remember playing the latter, the Wayne Gretzky's game, way more. That it the play by play and the noises and all the things, I had a serious flashback. I don't know if anyone listening is players, maybe look it up on YouTube or something. When you're choosing your lineups, the noise that it makes when you choose the lines, and oh my God, it was incredible. Like listening to the play by play, it just really, really brought me back. It was, I just unlocked some memories that I knew I had, like I remembered it, but it was incredible. And it was amazing. Because in Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey, it was the fisherman that was the logo of the team. So it was fun. And then in Breakaway 98, it was the wave jersey with the original crest.
Yeah.
And just thinking about the, and we'll eventually get to Around the Rink here. A little new setup here. I'll finish up, but it was interesting. Just the, and they did this with Tom Brady, right? The Madden games, like the first game he was in and the most recent one.
Oh yeah.
And they did that comparison. The
graphics, right.
Oh, and I'm playing Breakaway 98, and of course I get a penalty. And because I'm just mashing the controller,
and so undisciplined.
So because I didn't know whatever it was, like hook and whatever. Everything's just the same. Like there's like a million buttons on a N64 controller, and the guy skates into the penalty box, which is ice level. Like he skates into the penalty box without stepping up or anything, which is funny on its own. And then he sits down and then just becomes like a cardboard figure.
Door
like,
doesn't even open
himself anymore. It does open. But it does open, but he like you can just see that there's ice on the inside of the penalty box. Like he just skates in, but then he sits down and stops moving and just becomes like a cardboard figure, like the crowd is, and he just sits there.
That's great.
And it's oh my God, it was I forgot that's what it was like. Like I play old video games. I still like break them out every once in a while, but some of those things are really funny to go back and look at.
Yeah, I mean, I still play the new NHL games. I love them.
I only have a 360, so I can't. They stopped making past 16 or 17.
Yeah,
probably. So I don't. I broke my streak of getting it for Christmas every year.
Yeah, I am a nerd. I have the new Xbox, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna get the new NHL, and I was like really excited, like you said, to play career mode. And I when I started it back in, when it came out in September, there wasn't even a season yet. I was like, I can't wait to see what they made Sorokin. Started the game. Wasn't even in the game. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, right. And then you recently did a Twitch on that, right?
Yeah. So I started a franchise mode because they finally put him in the game. He was a downloadable content. They put him in, and now I have him. So not bad. They put him in as an 80 overall, and he has the potential to become a starting goaltender, which I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, some way to go, I think, but yeah, we could talk about that too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later, but for now let's talk about the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association, referred to as the PHWPA. They will be holding their first Dream Gap Tour game this Sunday at 7 p.m. at Madison Square Garden. and the game will air on NHL Network in the US and Sportsnet in Canada. So pretty cool stuff there. MSG Network will re-air the game on Monday, March 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, my birthday. This also is the first professional women's hockey game being played at MSG. So that's really cool. I didn't know that, and I was really surprised when I heard it. Team Minnesota will skate against Team New Hampshire.
I think this is the first Dream Gap Tour of this year. That's my mistake in the notes. I think they've done some of these games before.
Oh, yeah.
And what we should have said before, kind of jumping in, is that we changed this from around the NHL to around the rink, very intentionally.
Sure.
Because we want to cover more hockey, as much NHL action as there is. There's so much more hockey, than just the men's game in particular, and the NHL and the AHL and all those different things. So we want to highlight the just growing the game. That's all a lot of people want to talk about, but it's rarely something that you see up until really recently. So we had a conversation last week, James, Joe, and I, and we're making a conscious effort to kind of bring some of this to the table. That it'll expand some of our horizons. Yeah. We hope to have some people on that know about the PWHPA and the NWHL, and everything else. Just, you know, the different initiatives going on in the game. If we're lucky enough, hopefully we can bring some people onto the show that can speak to it a little bit more than we can. But we'll do our best, and we'll make sure we're doing our research. And it's interesting. You know, I think having coached women's hockey at SUNY Oswego, it was the club team, but so it wasn't NCAA. But, you know, I learned a lot about what they can bring to the table and the amazing skill level and the commitment and all of that. And it's just not different. It's important to, you know, we think it's important to highlight that stuff. So this is super cool. They've made the PWHPA Dream Gap Tour. I believe it's sponsored by Secret, is partnered with a lot of different teams, Toronto, and I believe Chicago and the Rangers and maybe one or two others. But it's really cool to see what they're doing. And, you know, like I said, growing the game, it's rising tide floats all boats in this sport. Having, you know, I love that it's going to be on, you know, national television. It's going to be broadcast, you know, far and wide. It's unfortunate that the NWHL playoffs couldn't be, that they just didn't make it quite their quote unquote bubble, didn't make it quite as far as they'd hoped. And those games were canceled that were going to be on NBC, I believe. If I'm not mistaken,
I think you're right. Yeah, I think they were supposed to be on NBC.
So definitely super cool. Speaking of the NWHL, did you see any video? Did you catch the videos from any of those games?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
So I remember on a couple, because I'm going through Twitter and there were a bunch of people that were tweeting about the game. So someone had the Twitch link and I clicked on it and I'm looking and I'm like, the entire neutral zone is blue.
Really?
Like the ice is blue. And I also noticed that the posts of the net were purple. And this is like some Jeff Merrick stuff. I don't know if for those listeners of 31 Thoughts and Sportsnet and stuff, he's always like, you know, I'm Team Chaos. I want to do different stuff. He said multiple times, I want to change the color of the ice. Like we can make it green or something. It's wild. And I want to know what your thoughts are on stuff like that, like changing little things to like make it more fun. I know you weren't a fan of the helmets, so maybe like on the, you know, it's like more ads on the ice or things like that. Is it a distraction?
No, well, so I'm not like against making things more fun in a sense of like being more creative with color schemes and stuff. Like I wouldn't see any issue with like maybe changing. Like you said, the goalposts are purple, right? Why not allow every team to have goalposts that are their team colors, right?
I actually really like that. I wonder if it's a distraction. Like I noticed it like maybe the second or third clip I was watching. I was like, wait a second. And I paused. I was like, yeah, that's purple.
Yeah.
Very purple.
But like it's clearly, I mean, if they're doing it in one league, it could happen in another. It's not a distraction. Why? I mean, I don't see the, you know, if anything, I don't know if this is controversial saying this, but like, and not like weird, whatever. the goalpost being red makes it an easier target to me. No,
I don't know. I feel it would just be something to get used to in like every rink. They'd have to have like approved colors. Like you can't make them white where it's like hard to see.
Yeah, well,
against the boards or something like that. They'd have to like say like it's got to be a dark color.
It'd be like the base color of your team, right? So for the Islanders, it would be blue. For the Kings, it would be black. Or for the Golden Knights, it could be gold. Like that would be sweet. Like a gold post, that'd be so cool. And even like around the boards, the top of the boards where the glass starts and the boards end, is usually red, right? Make that, you know, similar. Keep it uniform. Make it team colors. Like it would just be visually pleasing. Like I think it would look really nice.
Yeah, I think the NHL having a little more fun with that kind of stuff would be great.
Yeah,
it would just show some. There's not a lot of personality anywhere, you know. So like, there's only so much a player can do with their equipment. There's only so much if you're not a goalie anyway. There's only so much that you can do. It would give the rink a little bit more personality. That's where your attention is most of the time. You're not worried about all the, especially if you're not at the game itself.
Yeah, I feel like the blue line and the red line, they have purpose. So like keep those that way. But you know, I guess the shade of the ice. I mean, I feel like white's easiest for TV viewers to see the black puck, if that makes any sense.
But I didn't watch long enough to see if that was a problem or not. I wondered how it was as a player. And something that I don't know that could be different rink to rink, you know, because these players are so used to like they notice the chip in the puck and the weight difference, right? Like they just every little thing is kind of like, you know, like, and I always think that Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
Article on the Athletic where they outline his whole schedule and like eats an apple at 3:28, throws out apple core at 3:31. Like it's I can't imagine like changing things like that. Even goalposts. Like I wonder if the NHLPA would even go for it. Like or again they would have to. I'm sure both parties just need to like come together on it. But
right.
I thought it was at least interesting that they were making the game fun and approachable and accessible. Like it was just different. It just had some kind of personality, which I think the women's game does a much better job of in general. It's so much more fun. There's so much more personality there. The Zamboni driver, it was like a big deal during that tournament. Like I love all that stuff. It just makes it, you know, new fans aren't going to hate this. Like you're just kind of like giving a lot of access points into this is interesting. This is different or whatever the case is. And those things just kind of jump to the top of my head.
Yeah, and I think it's important for them to do that kind of thing because they're trying to grow the sport, right? They're trying to grow women's hockey, whereas the NHL has been around forever and it, you know, it's for now stuck in its ways and but still there are so many fans, right? So many people are still watching no matter what. But it definitely would benefit the NHL to, you know, look at the NWHL and say, wow, these things are drawing viewers, drawing fans, new fans, you know, reaching people that we haven't reached before. Maybe we should adopt some of these best practices. Maybe it'll be beneficial for us. So,
I think that's important. Making sure to reach new audiences and a new segment that we're going to do as part of our kind of expansion of everything is we're going to highlight a writer or a personality or media member. Of the week and somebody that's doing good work in diversity and inclusion and all that stuff. There's a really long list. We're hopefully highlight a bunch of people. I've saved a bunch of stuff already, which is great. I follow a lot of them on Twitter and they're fantastic. And the first one you may already know about.
And if you don't, you should.
And if you don't, follow them right now.
Pause this
podcast and
go on Twitter and press follow.
Yeah. They're doing amazing work. The Black Girl Hockey Club, founded in 2018 by Renee Hess to unite Black women in the hockey community. They've teamed up with, most recently, they've teamed up with the Seattle Kraken, creating some cool beanies to support the Black Girl Hockey Club scholarship program. They're getting noticed. You know, I think they're doing a lot of work with a whole bunch of hockey leagues. from the NWHL. I'm sure they're working with the PWHPA. They're doing stuff with NHL teams. I can't say enough good things about what they are doing.
Yeah, definitely.
And definitely go follow them. Pay attention to what they're doing. I took they have the Get Uncomfortable pledge to fight racism in hockey. And I think
the Hurricanes just got in on that as well.
So there's a lot of, I think they're bringing, along with things like the Hockey Diversity Alliance and other groups, trying to find a way to kind of hold people accountable. And
right.
If, we kind of talk about this, and I'm surprised I remembered. We always say, show me the receipts. This is a moment where you can actually have a receipt.
And you can show it.
And you don't need to make a donation. Find a way to get involved and promote what they're doing. Amplify the good work that they're doing. And when you can, help them. Because that kind of stuff's really important. So this is a time, and not a receipt so that you can post it somewhere and it's for vanity. This is because you're helping to grow a sport that you love, and it's important to do that. So I'm really happy to be doing this little segment. I'm extra happy that our first one's Black Girl Hockey Club. Take the Get Uncomfortable challenge, and definitely, like James said, go follow them right now.
Right now.
If you didn't do it,
now pause it. I'm mad at you for not doing it before, but I'm not mad at you in about now because you just followed them. Good job.
Great. You're back. Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you for
and you're staying. Just in time for NHL news.
Let's talk about the Lake Tahoe games. Despite the hiccup, right? They had the hiccup where they had to pause the game. There were some ice issues. And the crazy thing that they said, you know what? Screw it. We'll start again at midnight. That was so cool to me.
Can we just pause on that for a second? Sure. I know I'm going off script. So that whole issue with the Columbus Carolina game where it was offside and they called a penalty and it was a delay game thing and it was a goal and it was it. But we can just pause games for what was it? How long was the pause?
God, it must have been like over 6 or 7 hours.
All right, that's what I was going to say. I thought it was like more than 6 hours. You're telling me
right?
There's no precedent to take the goal back or whatever that I can't even remember. It was so dumb.
Yeah.
There's no, but just hit pause on this for 6 hours. That won't have any influence on the game. That won't mean anything to anything that's going on. Just go ahead. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, the outcome stayed the same. I, in my opinion, the Avalanche were winning the game. They were the better team to start. And they wound up winning anyway. But I mean, look, yes, with the bad, they were able to pause a game for six, seven hours and resume it later. The good part about this was that it was so successful in, there weren't any fans and they couldn't do anything about having fans there, but you bet that there will be next time because the views were insane.
Well, do you make it in the future? I'm not saying that they shouldn't do things like stadium series, but games like this, making it a TV experience. Go, and especially like this, where if the NHL is trying to grow a market, you can all of a sudden just go anywhere. You can just play a game in Vermont.
Right.
Go find a beautiful lake. Lake George in New York or something like that. Or, you know what I mean? Like you can pretty much go find any beautiful spot has winter and go play outside and make it something for the players and obviously for sponsors and things like that. But you don't necessarily need to have fans there. I think it'd be amazing to have been there.
Right.
Right. It makes me really want to be a legitimate reporter. And be able to, you know what I mean? And they go must travel
have been
around. But
oh man, they really must have been. I was so jealous.
Yeah, it was super cool. Just seeing those photos that morning, or I think the day before.
Yeah.
The fact that it was next to the lake and not on the frozen lake didn't take anything away from it. It would be obviously impossible to do that on a frozen lake.
Yeah.
I was like, it's kind of kitschy. Like, I guess he's like, you can just set up a rink anywhere and like take the roof off of it. I think on Coney Island, right? There's the rink like on the beach. True. Like right down the, it's like next to the Cyclone Stadium, right?
Well, yeah, but let's put it in this sort of context now. Let's just say they were like, let's do this in New York. Where would they do it? Where would you want to see them do it?
I think, you know, seeing it next to like on Lake Tahoe, I'd love for them to do it in just a weird spot with like somewhat of an NHL connection where you can get alumni to come back and make it really interesting and highlight people from where that is. I think doing it in, and selfishly doing it somewhere in central New York, whether it's like on the shores of Lake Ontario somewhere.
That'd be pretty cool.
Cause that background in the winter time is crazy. It's the weather here is a little nuts.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be, I don't think it's easy to do an outdoor game anywhere. As we've seen, they still had to cancel for 6 hours.
I mean, they did it in California.
They did it in California. So I think, you know, in Oswego, you know, you have Eric Coles from there. Rob Schremp is from Fulton. He's just south of there. You have, you know, I think Jimmy Howard's from Syracuse, Alex Tuck's from Syracuse. Boo Neves is from Syracuse. Joel Farabee is from Cicero, Syracuse area. So there's a lot of like current and former NHLers that can make that interesting. And kind of highlighting these kind of growth markets, and maybe New York isn't a growth market, but trying to find these places where like it's up and coming for hockey or something.
Yeah.
Or doing it like outdoors in Lake Placid somewhere, you know, in the mountains something. It doesn't have to be like on the shores of a lake. It could really be anywhere. What about you? Anything in mind? Anything that jumped out?
I mean, so to me, I'm thinking if it's going to happen in New York, you know, they always are going to, they're going to have the Rangers be a part of it. And if they did another Rangers Islander series, that'd be fine with me. And Central Park just comes to mind, right? I mean, how cool would it be to have an NHL game in the middle of Central Park, something that I've walked through probably at least a dozen times?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I know they practice there sometimes. The Rangers
have
practiced there.
Yeah, actually, side story. My uncle did a photo shoot with the New York Rangers after they won the 1994 Stanley Cup in Central Park, and they were skating around the ice in Central Park. And he was taking photos, and it was really cool. He designed Mike Richter's helmet that year as well. So
I forget cool that your uncle is like super legit.
Yeah, my
like
my that. Uncle is a goalie mask guru. He has designed lots of masks before, namely Peter Mrazek. Who did he just do recently? Thatcher Demko. The other day when I saw him, he was like, "Hey, look who I'm casually texting." It was Thatcher Demko. I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool, whatever, I'm not jealous." Moving on. But yeah, oh, and he just did Carter Hart's new Venom mask for the Flyers. It's really cool. So I tweeted out, I think, so if you haven't seen it, just check my media on Twitter. It's in there. Really cool stuff. And if you know can't find it, just tweet me. I'll be sure to show you a picture of it. But yeah, really cool stuff there. But I would love to see, you know, a game in, like I said, in Central Park. I think the atmosphere is so cool for it, right? I mean, it's New York City, you know, people everywhere walking around, and then suddenly it's like, oh wait, what's going on over there? And it's like a hockey game. It'd be pretty cool if it was like just general admission. You just walk up to it. That would never happen, but it would be pretty cool.
I wonder where on Long Island you could do it.
That's like a good question.
In the winter time, where it would work,
right? That I was trying to think of that.
Imagine a game on the beach on Long Island in the winter or something somewhere. I'm trying to think where it even makes sense. I mean, maybe any of the state parks. I don't. The logistics to me are a little over my head, so I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough to pin down an exact location for Long Island, but I mean, with the way that they, you know, if they were able to pull it off in California, I have no doubt in my mind they could find a spot in or on Long Island and get that done. But yeah, so the Lake Tahoe games were really cool. The Avalanche won their game. The Bruins won their game the following day. Really cool weekend at Lake Tahoe. I think the players loved it. The NHL loved it. And from what I saw, all of you loved it. So really cool stuff. Let's talk about the shocking news that we heard the other day regarding Artemi Panarin. You know, he wound up taking a leave of absence from the New York Rangers. to go back to Russia and handle a situation in which he was accused of hurting physically an 18-year-old girl. And this was what was the year, John? Do you remember that they claimed that this happened?
He was 18.
Right. This was when he was 19. In the AHL.
Yeah, and I can't recall how old he is now. So, you know, was he 26 or something?
Right. So regardless, it's at the beginning of his KHL career. He ends up taking a leave of absence. I saw a lot of chatter.
He's 29, sorry. So
yeah,
he's 10 years ago.
So I saw a lot of chatter. People were saying, you know, well, if he's not guilty, why is he taking a leave of absence? Yada, yada, yada. That's neither here nor there, guys. He has a family that he has to go and you know, take care of. So, you know, he went back to get it all straightened out. And I'm not confirming or denying whether it did or did not happen, but a lot of the, you know, what we know kind of, in my opinion, points to the fact that this was a fabricated story. His former coach is a loyal Vladimir Putin supporter. And Panarin is a adamant Vladimir Putin, what's the opposite of supporter that I can't even think of right now? He just does not support Putin. And he's very outspoken about that. You know, so maybe, you know, it has something to do with that. There's also a bunch of talk about how his former coach in the KHL is he's a little bit of a loose cannon. He's been in some trouble before. And this is, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if this was a fabricated story. It's just a tough situation. I hope that it works out. And the truth comes out. I don't know that we'll ever find out exactly what the outcome is, but it's just a really tough situation. Tough blow for the Rangers too, who lose their best player.
Yeah, I saw, and I'm surprised I didn't save it, but I did see a tweet that was saying that a bunch of the players or Panarin's teammates at the time were all denying this.
Yeah, they all denied it. Even Igor Arenko, who he is now a GM for one of the teams in the KHL, but he used to be the Julian Camara, right? He was the main beat reporter in the KHL, basically the Elliot Friedman over there. And he said, he's like, this is not true. This is a completely false statement here. So again, no verdict, but this is a bit of a tough situation, especially, like I said, for a young Rangers team who loses their best player. And you know, for a guy who, listen, you know, I know the Islanders lost out on Panarin. You know, he almost was an Islander, but he just, from what I've been, what I've seen around the league and from his teammates, I hear from his teammates, he sounds like a great guy, and you don't want something like this to happen to a guy like that. So let's hope it's not true. Let's hope that it was, you know, something that they could work out, and, you know, he's able to come back and pick back up where he left off. And, you know, we'll have to check back in on this when the time comes, right?
Yeah, I wish him all the luck, because it's a bad situation. Like you said, the Rangers are also in a tough situation with this too, and sounds like they're supporting him,
yeah,
and helping him through it. And that's despite some other missteps by that organization very recently. This sounds like they're trying to get back on the right track with their team, and
yeah, and they fully supported right by them. They fully supported him.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, it sounds like this is not only just the right thing to do, but they're genuinely trying to help. So
yeah,
good on them. Which, yeah, you know, again, show the receipts. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. Here's a question: is it possible to get a read on the best players and teams this season? Because, you know, they're not playing outside of their division. We kind of got a read on this where we started talking about this last week. But, you know, you look at guys like Austin Matthews. He has 18 goals right now.
I think in 14 games, like, he missed a few.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, McDavid and Matthews are kind of ripping up the Canadian division.
Yeah.
And when you can play Vancouver and Ottawa combined 16 times, you're going to score some goals. And when you're playing them three right. times a week or it's, you know, yeah, you can score a goal a game. That's what's going to happen. It's like Sidney Crosby against the Islanders. He just scores points every time. That's just what he does.
Too soon.
Yeah, probably too soon. We'll get to that. But that's kind of that. It's just a really good example. I don't know if you can really get a good read. Like, I know I was thinking about like who's going to be the, you know, the top scorer in the league. It's like, I don't know. Not everyone's competition is exactly the same. I mean, the East division is a lot tougher than a lot of other divisions.
I'll tell you right now, if Auston Matthews is in the Mass Mutual East, he ain't scoring 18 goals. He might have fit, you know, 13, 12, 13. You know,
the Leafs certainly aren't leading the division, but right. I think, I think his numbers come down to earth a little bit. I mean, you can't take too much away, but it's enough to say, okay, you're looking into it a little bit. This whole season has a giant asterisk on it. It's kind of like last season's postseason, right? True. That's just how it is. So even if the Islanders were in first place in the division, and they were leading the league in points, I understand they're not leading the league in points because they're not playing all the teams. They're not, you know, they have very different competition than, you know, if you're, I don't know, any other teams, you know, it's, you know, Vegas and Colorado playing each other a whole bunch. And that division's kind of heating up. That's probably another one, you know? So I don't know. It's same thing with goaltending. Like you're playing a lot of the same teams over and over. I'm not sure you can get a really accurate read on anything as far as who's the best team, who's the best player.
Yeah.
Things like plus minus or anything like that. I've been thinking about it a lot too, because everyone loves the comparative thing. It's an interesting narrative for a lot of people.
What I think you're going to see is you're going to see very different seasons for individual players and teams next season, right? They're planning on having a regular season starting in October. Our good friend Nick Alberga had already mentioned that earlier this year. So I think you're going to see a very different turn of events, and some guys who, you know, like we were talking fantasy before, if you picked up some guys who were doing well this year, I might have to break it to you that next year those guys might not do so good because things are going to get back to normal. Hey, I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll do better.
I mean, it's a good example of this on the Islanders is Anders Lee. Guy's got eight goals already.
Yeah.
And he's not been on that trend for some time as like an actual goal scorer. Now, could he have turned it back on? And because Barzal's on a heater, he's on a heater, and that's just, you know, one's going, the other one's going. Yeah, that's totally possible. Would I bank on it 18 games in the season that he has eight goals next year? Probably not.
Yeah. We'll see.
You know, so I think it's just something to keep in mind as we go through the season. And I have some other questions about the Islanders specifically that I added. I don't know if you see. Yeah. I don't know if you saw yet.
I did. We'll get there. But before we do, let's talk about New Jersey, who named a new captain last week. And that is Nico Hischier. And this comes as no surprise to me. You know, he was the number one overall pick a couple of years ago. He's just 22 years old, and some people might think that, you know, that's a little too young, but, you know, it's starting to happen more and more these days. You know, it started with Sidney Crosby, right? His second season, he was the captain of the Penguins. But then, you know, you see guys like McDavid get the C, Jack Eichel get the C. So it's not so uncommon for a young guy to be the captain. And, you know, Hischier is, as you've seen before, he is a leader, right? I think he went back to, where is he from? Switzerland?
That sounds right.
And I think they have the mandate for you to be in the military for like a month. And even though he wasn't going to actually, you know, be on any deployments or anything, it was his duty to make sure to go, you know, go back and, you know, fulfill his month's role, you know, whether it was just, you know, a paper job, a desk job, you know, somewhere. He did it. And the thing is, he could have gotten out of it, but he did it anyway. So that just shows you the kind of character he is. You're looking at me like you didn't know that happened.
No, I know that. I was thinking about, I was trying to think about other players that had kind of done that. And I read an interview today with Islanders prospect Robin Salo, where he also mentions that he did that in Finland.
Yeah.
And that it's mandatory. So I was trying to think of, there's a bunch of countries that make it mandatory to go do that. And I think I think it speaks a lot to his character.
And the Devils were like really cool about it. Like they highlighted it and, you know, they put an article out about it, and they kind of, you know, took you through a day in his life, you know, doing that.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I'm going to have to go back and check that out. And I think he's a, he's definitely a good person because he's kind of been around a little bit. There's a lot of youth infusion. There's some veterans around, but there's a small core there that they're trying to build around. And they'll come back. Blackwood's kind of come out of nowhere. Happy to see them. You want the Devils to be good. You want the teams to be good around the Islanders. Maybe not the entire division, the entire East Division or Metro Division like it has been.
Yeah.
You know, you expect teams to drop off. Instead, they've all kind of gotten better. But specifically with those rivalries, you want to see them do well.
Yeah.
So that it's good competition. So you're not beating the Devils and it's like, yeah, we should beat them. You know, I want to make it a good game. I want to make it like it means something the last game of the season. You know, I want to Wade Dubowitz poke check in a shootout to, you know, win it. You know what I mean? Like, I think those moments are really good. And when you do beat them, it just feels so much better. And for those of you who want to add the Captain C to your Nico Hischier jersey or update any of your Islanders swag, you can do
Rangers
that.
Rangers too.
Any team. It doesn't matter what team they have. You can do that at Amity Harbor Sports. On the Island is brought to you by Amity Harbor Sports. They are a family owned and operated business for over 40 years who specializes in hockey and baseball equipment. What you might not know is that they also specialize in logo design, screen printing, and embroidery, and work with groups to customize popular items such as tees, hoodies, joggers, jerseys, hats, masks, and more. They create custom apparel in a broad range of designs, colors, and styles, and offer popular brands at wholesale prices, including Bauer, CCM, Under Armour, Athletic Knit, Champion, American Apparel, Adidas, and more. With remote learning and work from home still pretty prevalent, they've also set out to change the way the industry sells and fundraises by creating online pop-up stores for selling branded and personalized apparel products and gear. You can learn more at AmityHarborSports.com on Instagram and Facebook, and check out their Long Island Hockey Co. clothing line at LongIslandHockeyCo.com or on Instagram at Long Island Hockey Co.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Islanders. It's about that time. And Anthony Beauvillier is back this week. It's great news for the team. Started off on the third line with Peugeot and Wahlstrom, and I actually really liked that. Kind of wish it would have stayed. He eventually found his way back to the second line, and the first two lines started to take form to what we've seen mostly in the past, right? Lee Barzal, Eberle, Beauvillier, Nelson, and Bailey.
That was after a couple of games. Like, while Beauvillier was on that line, and then it kind of shifts, and then right. Cole gets hurt. So yeah. That shifts things around. And
yeah, I wonder if Dal Cole, when he comes back, if that changes things again. Komarov's in as of now. I imagine that he comes back out once Dal Cole is healthy. I don't know what happened to Dal Cole. Do you? I don't think they really announced or said.
No, I don't know what the injury was. I don't even know if they've, and maybe it's probably buried somewhere, if it's a lower body or upper body injury.
Could be. Yeah, well, I think they say upper body injury, but like they, you know, what caused it, we have no idea.
No, I know, and I don't remember anything specific.
Yeah.
What I will say is you know, about Dal Cole, because I know there's a lot of differing opinions about the guy right now. He's obviously not putting points up. However, when he's in the lineup, they're doing very well. I tweeted about it the other day.
Give us the stats, man.
And I don't have it up in front of me, but they're 5-1, I believe, with him in the line, 5-1-2 with him in the lineup, and then 3-5-2 without him in the lineup or something like that, where they're just not playing well.
5-1-2 with him in, 3-5-1 with him out.
Well, I was pretty close there. And I think it showed me with thinking about it a little bit more, it showed me something. I think it's important about the depth of the forward group. I think they're one player away from really rounding this out. And we've talked about this before, how being able to bump one player down,
okay,
would make a huge difference. So when he's in the lineup and you can bump down a Bailey, or you can bump down somebody on that third line, now that you have a Wahlstrom, that he's looking more and more comfortable. He's sniffing around that net. He's gotta pop one, another one, or you know, start racking up assists pretty soon with Pajot being on heater. But I think seeing how important, you know, it's not necessarily that first line winger, and we've talked about that. It's a matter of like just moving one guy down the line up to that third line to play with Pajot and who turned out to be Wahlstrom. And with Daukol in the lineup and that they're holding on to the puck more than half the time when he's on the ice with what was Nelson and Eberle for that period, that's so important. And I wonder what that looks like in future years if it's not Daukol. You know, maybe what they've been looking for all this time was a middle six guy and not a first line guy. Or it doesn't need to be a Panarin. I know you have opinions and we'll get to another player later, but I wonder if it's that kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean,
and moving Lee down. You know what I mean? Like it's about filling out, it's not necessarily about finding the right first line guy. It's about who's going to get moved down the lineup and make it deeper, because that's where the Islanders are getting success right now, because their first and third lines are scoring goals.
So the way I see it, there's a cap, right? There's like a potential cap, and the Islanders haven't hit that cap yet. Having Daukol in the lineup pushes it up, but it still doesn't reach that max potential, right? You know, I like Daukol on the second line, and I think that, you know, if the pucks start bouncing his way, maybe he could put a couple in the net. Nelson's really the scorer on that line, and Bailey could feed. You know, and people have opinions about Bailey. You know, we'll talk about it, but you know, Daukol, like you said, on the second line gives them good depth because, you know, you could put Pavelier on the third line and have essentially two second lines going. They could play equal minutes and have Pajot and Wahlstrom out there with Pavelier.
Or Bailey. To me, it's interchangeable. I think both of them are maybe that third line needs a setup guy in Bailey more than they need speed with Pavelier. Yeah, Wahlstrom can obviously keep up, you know, so you just need someone to set him up.
Decision. Like they can't keep flip-flopping. They need to let the line. Yeah, they need to let the lines build some chemistry. So, you know, I like Daukol being in the lineup, and I think that once he's back, he'll probably slot in on the third line. We'll probably see Bavillier stay there. But it's good to know that if things get stale, they could switch it up, and there is something there. You know, Eberle was doing really well in the second line.
I think he was doing well. It had nothing to do with the line mates necessarily.
True, could
be. He was the one driving play,
and he looked really good on the first line again the other night. So
yeah, he didn't miss a beat. And I think the Daukol is obviously not a top six player. Let's not confuse any of this.
True,
he is, however, on this team because he creates space for the other two players. Well, he's going to track that puck down. He's going to get it back for Nelson or whomever else on that line. And I think that's what they need on that line.
Right.
It's just a matter of Nelson's only scoring on the power play right now, and Bailey looks like he's asleep. So
we've said this before, right? If Daukol can just play his role, do his job, it's enough. And that's essentially what he's doing.
And he's not getting that line isn't necessary when Daukol's on it, or at least this season or whatever. I don't think they're getting hard. Like they're not getting defensive zone starts. They're getting a lot of off. So I think they're just like Dobson and Green. They're sheltering them a little bit, but when they're out there, they're effective.
Right.
You know, I think the opposite could be said of, I know people are, and again, I'm going off script here. I apologize. The Mayfield Letty pairing. And, you know, I think even in our chat the other night, we were talking about that during the game that they're, you know, I don't know about liability, but I think they're, it's not great. They're not playing very well, but I think they're getting tough assignments. Like you're playing the best players. You're going to get beat. They're going to make you look bad. The goal is to limit that as much as possible. It's not like, it's like, again, playing against a Crosby or a Ovechkin or some of these guys, they're going to get their chances. You just have to make sure that you're not getting as many chances in the game against you. And that they're not high danger chances. They're going to find a way. They're the best players. That's just how it works. So,
Speaking of the Penguins, the Islanders lost two in a row to them this week. First game, not great. Got dominated. Slow to the puck, slow all game. They you know, typical real bad Islander loss. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, they looked dead. It looked like during that however long it was, that five game skid.
Yeah,
that like bad. That just inconsistent shift to shift.
Yeah,
they looked sleepy out there. That was a tough one to watch.
Game two was better. They throw 35 shots on net. They held the Penguins to 18. They lose 3-2. It's unbelievable. That was a
good game. No bounces. It was
a great game, right? Trotz was even like, what do you want me to say? We played a great game.
And that's what you want to see, though. Like, if you're going to throw up a stinker every once in a while, you have to come back and lock it down. You hope that it comes, you at least squeeze a point out of it.
Yeah. And then, you know, they get the Sabres and they play not as bad as the first game against the Penguins, but definitely nowhere near as good as the second game against the Penguins. And they probably should have lost, but they end up winning that game. So it kind of made up for the loss to the Penguins in that game too. Just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I can't really explain the puck luck here, but it was good. You know, the thing is, they've seen the Sabres, what is it, three times now this season? It's just good to see that, you know, they're beating the teams that they should be beating. If they lose a couple games
for they've also lost to the Devils. They should be, you know,
Devils were on a hot streak. They took I think they took the Flyers, they took Boston. Like they're sneaky good.
They're sneaky good. And Jack Hughes, we've said it before, looks fantastic this season. Yeah. Looks like a completely different player. I wonder. Yeah, we'll get to some different stuff.
Yeah, but right now the Islanders are third in the division. They're a few games ahead of the teams around them. Does that concern you a little bit?
I didn't like looking at the standings this morning and seeing Boston at 16 games, mm-hmm. Washington at 17 games, Philly at 15, and Pittsburgh at 16. They're tied with the Islanders are tied with Washington in points with 21 with 18 games played. They have three more games played than Philadelphia, and they're only two games ahead. And they're two games ahead or behind rather than of Pittsburgh, who only has 16 games, and they're also two points ahead of them. Now they've dropped games to both of those teams, which is the concern.
Yeah.
It's not like it's Boston or the Rangers where they've beaten them a few times, or Buffalo where they have their number. To me, I don't like the positioning. I want to see them the consistency. And that was the Buffalo game on Monday night was the epitome of the season. That if I had to sum it up, and they've done this a few times where they wind up squeaking out a win, but it again, shift to shift or period to period, they're just not the same team. There's something about, I don't know if something's going on out there and they're getting frustrated. It's a lot of errant passes. It's a lot of just forcing plays where they should be getting the puck deep. They're trying to make an extra move. I've heard Butch say it a couple times on Monday night's broadcast where it was late in the game. And I think it was Bulak that came in with the puck and he's like, he's just got to get that in. You know, he's just got over the blue line. He tried to make one extra move, and luckily the puck kind of trickled behind the Sabres net at some point. But I don't like that, and it's concerning because they're inconsistent, and it's so easy. Again, they dropped two against Pittsburgh. If that happens this weekend, you know, they play Boston on Thursday. But if it happens again, if they only take one of these next three games, they're in fifth place. Like it's that quick. Now it's only. It's 30% of the way through the season, if you can believe it already.
Yeah.
For the Islanders, 18 games, right?
Yeah, 30, true. I was writing an 2%. Article and I was like, J.J. Peugeot was 18 games played? Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, and that's what – they played the most in the division.
Right.
So that's what's concerning is if they're going to have games – if they're not going to have games in hand, they want – they and they're going to have teams in their rearview mirror, make it incumbent – just like in a game, make them go 200 feet. It's incumbent upon them to win the games that they have in hand. Don't make it easy for them by having games and, you know, playing more games and then losing those games. Take advantage. If you're playing a little bit more now than other teams, win those games, because you're going to get a break when they start playing a little bit, when, you know, schedule, they have like, they have 2 days off this week. You know, teams are going to catch up and play, you know, you're going to have your moment too, to play catch up or pad your stats. You want to make sure it's padding your stats and not playing catch up.
I'm not overly concerned. You know, it's been shaky play here and there, and you're totally right in your assessment. But I'll tell you why I'm not overly concerned. I'm not overly impressed with any team in this division. We've beaten the best twice. Are we still the only team to give them two regulation losses? We've beaten them. Philly looks out of sorts.
If you're comparing the last like week or so, they still have a bunch of players on the COVID list.
Right. But they, you know, still they
gotta take advantage of it. And I think that's again, while Philadelphia is still playing games and don't have guys in the lineup, obviously they're not playing them right now, but you have to keep that in mind. They're still sniffing around the Islanders at three games behind, and they're only 2 points behind them. And well, that's what worries me.
Even at the beginning of the season, and I know, you know, it's a weird year, no camp or short camp, no exhibition games. We've seen this with the Flyers, right? They lose it on themselves sometimes. So the Flyers don't impress me. The Bruins don't impress me anymore. You know, they took a big hit this offseason, and I just don't see the same team on the ice night in and night out.
They're finding ways to win.
Right, but they're not winning against the Islanders. And that's,
so far, there's six games left, or however many games left.
Yes, you're right.
When it's game seven in the series this year, and the Islanders have won five or six of those, talk to me then.
Right. No, sure. But I'm just letting you know why right now I'm not concerned yet. I'm confident because they've proven that they can hang with and beat Boston. Again, Philly, I'm not impressed with. Pittsburgh, I'm not impressed with. Buffalo is Buffalo. New Jersey is not better than the Islanders. I think that next time they meet, the Islanders, you know, will figure it out. They will win. Let's see how long Panarin's out for with the Rangers. Lafreniere has not been as advertised. Kako hasn't really done anything since he's been in this league. So I'm not overly concerned as of yet.
I'm the Debbie Downer of the two of us. That's probably one of the easier things to admit.
Your words, but, not mine.
Yes, on a recording anyway. But I, you know, looking at the Islanders' recent schedule and all that, they're 6-2-2 in their last 10. That's second best in the division.
There you go.
They're, along with Boston, who's a plus 15, the Islanders are a plus 1. Everybody's at 0 or a minus.
There you go.
In the division. Varlamov is strong. That's who they're going to ride. They're going to ride their centers and their goaltending to the playoffs. Yeah. If that's how they make it. Varlamov will quietly be the fourth best goal in the league. Sorokin will come on and do his thing too, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully get some playing time. But,
please.
You know, and when you got a guy like Varlamov playing as well as he is, it's hard to say like, oh, sure, just don't play him. So it's a little bit of a tough situation for Trotz. I definitely see him, but he will need his rest come playoff time, and when those games are, you know, mean a lot more, and the spotlight, the intensity, everything kind of goes up there. I think it's important. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be positive about around the Islanders. I would just like them to do it on a more consistent basis. It's totally one thing to, they're going to lose games. I want to see them lose games like on Saturday against the Penguins.
Right.
Yep. That was a good game. It was frustrating, and you go out there and you can use that energy in the next game. You don't necessarily lose momentum like that. Point streak snapped, whatever. And that was the other night, but you lose, you, you, you snap the point streak in just a dud of a hockey game. That was hard. I mean, that was just a tough game to watch in general. Yeah. Like, if I didn't care about either of those teams, that was a tough game. But that's my problem, is that they, when they're losing hard. And then when they lose even a good game, well, now it's two losses in a row. And it's a team nipping at your heels. Like, it, that's where I get concerned. When they're playing good hockey and they can, they do it for these small stretches. And I said this in the beginning of the season, that was my biggest concern. And if I, in, if this team had a setback this season, I, you know, they can either be really good for 56 games, or they're going to be very mediocre and finish fifth in this division. And still have, you know, a winning record and all that stuff and a positive goal differential. But I can see them just not playing well enough for long enough to really do it. And right now, you know, they have to even out a little bit, in my opinion.
I have a question. Is the power play good?
I don't know. I think, can it be no, even if they're scoring goals? Like, I know that's the point. I know that's like literally the measurement of that.
Well, I mean, look, I feel like they're moving more. I feel like they're getting bodies in front of the net more. Let me tell you, man, that Wahlstrom shot the other night that led to the Peugeot goal. Oh, man.
But you notice how the first unit goes out there and they're playing hot potato. The pucks are on the outside. As soon as Wahlstrom gets on the ice, it was within like 10 seconds. He just gets an opportunity, puck on net, goal. And you're like, well, oh, okay, that's what happens. And I hate being that guy that's sitting there on the couch yelling, shoot. But for God's sakes, shoot the puck. Well, and you see what happens.
This is what I've been saying, though. And I put this article out for Isle's blog like a week and a half ago. And I was like, it's time to give Wahlstrom more minutes. Put him next to Barzal. Put him on the first power play unit and let him rip it. I love Ryan Pulock. He can't hit the net for anything.
Okay, we need to pause on that. He's obviously an asset to this team. He's an offensive asset. But my God, I think, what did I text you? They just need to have him shoot pucks for like an hour after the game below the hips or like, at the knee level, like something.
Like Fulton Reed.
Yes, 100%.
Soft need, hand, for God's sake.
They need, you know, they need Herb Brooks out there keeping the lights on after after a game and just again, just shoot. I can't. And, you know, it makes me feel better because in beer league, they do that too. These headhunter shots. Right. I'm trying to knock my teeth out at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday. But the same thing for Pulock. He's just trying to shoot it as hard as he can without being strategic about it. And it's not helped in that first unit. Kind of looks like crap.
That's what I'm saying, right? You need a shooter. And I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm all hopped up on Wahlstrom juice because he's so great. He's shown he's been so great
Is Wahlstrom juice a thing?
Yeah, it is now. For 12 minutes, he's been really good, right? No, he was drafted with an NHL-ready shot. His profile before the Islanders took him said NHL-ready shot. I'm not making this up. His shot has been ready. He needed to work on some facets of his game, and he did. He's proving that he can get these shots on goal. He did it. It led to a goal. I get it. It wasn't his goal, but it doesn't matter. You get pucks on net. It good things happen.
Okay. Is the difference between what, and if we're strictly speaking about the power play, and maybe we can zoom out a little bit about the Islanders forward group and the difference between guys like Wahlstrom and other players. You know, maybe a guy like Nelson. But the difference between like Pulock and Wahlstrom, is it just that one guy's shooting quicker than the other one? What I mean is like the release. Like Wahlstrom gets the puck, it's on and off his stick.
He knows how to shoot.
He just sees an opportunity, whereas Pulock is taking this, and maybe dating myself, Pulock's taking this like Al McGinnis windup at the blue line, and it's like, yeah, everyone sees this coming. Whereas Wahlstrom is just puck on or off his stick.
That's what I'm saying. The mechanics and the mentality are different. Wahlstrom has the mentality, mechanics.
That's what I'm looking for.
Well, right, and Walsham has the mechanics to for a really, really, really good shot, right. But he also has the mentality. He's done it a couple of times. He has the mentality. I got the puck. I'm shooting it. Gone. Got it. Gone.
Bellows did that too. I gotta say. I mean, the lapse in whatever his game recently. All that aside, when he was playing regularly, that puck was off his stick very quickly.
Talk about that for a minute. He didn't play for 3 weeks. And then we're like, oh, yeah, let's put him on second line. That's probably a good idea. And then they criticize him for making mistakes. Are you kidding? No.
I think it's one thing to criticize him, but my issue with that was where was the accountability for Komarov or anyone else? Bellows makes – all right, maybe it was two mistakes in that game, and they were pretty egregious. But
three mistakes. I get it.
I think that's fine. It's just – have accountability. He's make that your thing. Don't do it against the young players. They ostracize him.
He's 21 years old, and he didn't play for 3 weeks. Literally, 3 weeks. And you decided it was a good idea to throw him back in the top six and then ostracize him because he made two, yes, costly mistakes at 21 years old on 3 weeks of downtime? It doesn't make sense to me. Again, I'll say it again. I love Barry Trotz. I swear by him. I read his Bible every night. But I don't get some of these things. And look, no coach is perfect. He's the closest thing to it, in my opinion. But I don't think it was fair for Bellows. And I think he should absolutely 100% get another opportunity. But I speak my piece on Bellows. I hope the kid gets another shot. We'll see what happens with him. Wahlstrom needs to stay in the quote-unquote Ovi's office because it's working. It worked for the first opportunity he got. It worked. And I've seen on multiple occasions this: the second the puck touches his stick and he's anywhere in shooting vicinity, he does.
Top of the circle down, he's shooting
that puck. He's always shooting, and they need that. I think he needs more exposure. Keep him on the third line, that's fine. Put him on the first power play unit. I think at this point, look, I get trusting your veterans. I get, letting them work out the kinks. I think at this point we're okay taking Josh Bailey off of the power play unit. Put Beauvillier where he goes. Put Wahlstrom on the first unit. However you have to work it, Barzal could really use him.
Barzal, I don't understand his placement because Pulak is in that Ovechkin's office spot on the left wing wall for the one timer, and Dobson is playing quarterback. Barzal on the right wing wall has no angle as a righty. He needs to be that bumper. Now, yeah. I think what winds up happening is that you need to kind of make a decision here. The chemistry that he has with this guy like Eberle, and obviously you have Lee in front on that unit. So you put Wahlstrom maybe in Barzal's spot. Again, I believe Wahlstrom's also a righty.
Yes.
So he doesn't have a great angle, but you want to get the puck on the net. You can put Barzal in the bumper spot with Lee in front.
Yeah.
That's probably not a bad idea either. And you move Eberle down to the second unit and switch him if you're going to have somebody in that, again, on that left wing wall where Wahlstrom is on the second unit. That makes just as much sense. Still a righty. You're not changing the dynamic so much as the mentality. And that was a great word. That was exactly what I was trying to think of. You're adding another shooting element to that first unit, and a guy in front like lead that clean up the garbage, and Barzal in the high slot where if a rebound comes out that far, you can snipe. He's not sniping from the half wall on the right wing. It's not going to happen. He's got to make too many moves. And frankly, he loses the puck quite often on that wall trying to get the pass back.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. So I think there's an opportunity there. You're probably right. Moving some players around.
Yeah, you got it.
So as we just talk up the power play unit, now we're ripping it apart. But
I mean, look, the power play has been good. You could be right where they're scoring goals, but it's still not good. But it has the potential to be, and it could be even better, right? Instead of, I don't think we've ever had two power play goals in a game. One a game for consecutive games is like, wow, look at us. But two in a game is still unheard of. So
I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think how they operate. Like, you're obviously scoring goals, but it could be off a rush. It could be off a rebound. Like, right. It's not necessarily anything you're doing other than offense. Like, you're getting the puck to the net. That's not a good power play, right? Like, that's not the – it's there's got you have to have movement. You have to have players moving around. I loved – you know, I – where did Olofsson come from?
So,
you know, guys like that, you know, like, you just – the guy just wants to throw the – put the puck on the net.
And he's doing a good job. Look at Buffalo. Yes, worst team in the league, best power play. Because they do what they have to do to rotate the puck, get guys out of position, get the puck to Olofsson, and he fires it on net, and it works literally 30. I think they have 38% of the time right now, which is a lot. So yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous.
I think it was when they played the Islanders the other night, they said 40. So if that's true, they can do that with Wahlstrom. They can do it. He showed it. They can do it. Get it done. That's enough. Move on. Let's talk about a shooter who might be available.
Philip, you're Forsberg, all about this right now. Yeah.
Philip Forsberg is on the block, supposedly. Fourth period reports, Nashville might be blowing it up. They named three untouchables. Surprisingly, Pekka Rinne is there. Ryan Ellis. And who was the other? Roman Josi. Philip Forsberg's available? Are we kidding? I know. You don't love him. Here's the way I see it. Nashville has always been defensive-minded first, kind of like the Islanders. So he doesn't put up a ton of points, right? He's a 60-point player for the most part, sometimes 50, sometimes 60. But more often than not, he's near the 30-goal mark. A couple 30-goal seasons, 28-goal seasons, 29-goal seasons. And he has never really played with a bona fide number one center. Barzal would be the best center he's ever played with, right? He's always played with Ryan Johansson or Michael Granlund. Nobody of Barzal's status. Those 60 points could easily be 75 to 80 points next to Matt Barzal because, look, you have a guy like Philip Forsberg shooting the puck off of a feed from Barzal, and let's just say it doesn't even go in. It creates a rebound. Anders Lee will be there to clean that up. I think that this is a move that if it's available, you go after. And look, I get so many people, again, on Twitter, you know, the Holy Land. Well, what about the cap space? What about the money? This and that and the other thing. I get it. Good GMs find a way. Tampa Bay found a way. And I know some of you are going to say, well, Kucherov got hurt. Doesn't that help? Yeah, of course it helps. Boychuk got hurt and it helped us too. It happens. GMs find a way. And if they have to do maybe, you know, contract swaps and stuff like that, you do it, but you find a way. I think, you know, maybe two of the defensive prospects coming up, two out of the three in Wild, Sallow, and Bolduc, packaged with picks, maybe, you know, Holmstrom or whatever, you get it done.
Yeah, I wonder about in a league that you need more rookie contracts on your roster and having them produce to, you know, when these guys finally start bubbling up, the Islanders are finally starting to get their own crop of prospects, and they've done a really good job on defense. Looks like Robin Sallow's another defenseman that they're going to be able to kind of groom to be on the roster sooner than later, especially because Green is not getting younger. Should be calling him Gray at this point. Like he's good as maybe a seventh defenseman or whatever the case is.
He got me on that one.
That's not on the script. That's right off the dome here. But I think trading the future away, especially during a season that's a complete toss-up, in a season just ahead of the expansion draft, I think he's a good player. In a normal year, probably. In a year with an expansion draft, and you're going to be making all these moves, and something that we didn't talk about which we probably should have, and we're not going to go through the whole thing, but the NHL draft maybe not happening this year and it being pushed and doing both drafts next year so that everyone has an opportunity to see these players and prospects play if they're not playing in Europe. You know, whenever those trades are going to happen and however that's going to work, I just don't know if this is a time like, and this is why I kind of posed the question in here. And as we kind of wrap up things, you know, I don't know what makes this season a failure or a success just because of it's being a weird year because you're playing these same teams over and over.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know that this is the year where you're like, you got to be all in. Like if you're Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, you have to be so confident that this is the piece, just kind of like last year. Pageau is the piece. We can make a serious run at this. We can really turn things around. Now they were aided a little bit by a huge pause, but they go into the bubble and they do some damage. They gave the Stanley Cup champions a run for their money,
right.
The eventual Stanley Cup champions. So is this the year based on what I've seen? No, this is not the year you start selling off prospects to do this. And again, I know I'm the downer guy, but we're going to be super pissed when one of these prospects makes it, even if it's Bellows. I know that was who you would think.
Toss-up. Like, You're trading a possible for a guarantee. Philip Forsberg is.
I mean, for a year and a half. For 1.7 years of a contract.
Like, his contract runs up. You know that every time a player comes to Long Island, they like being here and they want to stay.
Yeah, but then he's gonna be 28. How long are you gonna sign him? Or 29, depending on when his birthday.
I mean, Taylor Hall signed a 1-year deal with Buffalo and apparently now wants to stay. Which I don't buy because apparently Jack Eichel's on the block. I still don't even buy that, but we'll see where that goes.
Hall has one goal, I believe, this season.
It really just has to, you know, it just depends on the cap situation moving forward. I don't think that.
And that's what I'm saying. You don't know that this year. It's not going to go up.
Right.
But and you have an expansion draft. So then you bring a Forsberg into the Islanders lineup. That's one more player exposed, or you're exposing him, which means then you lost him for nothing.
But Lamoriello doesn't do anything uncalculated. So if he does it, there will be a plan in place to keep him, and there will be a plan in place to make sure that moving forward, the cap situation is handled.
I know he'll do it and have his bases covered for the most part. I just don't know if I agree with it. And with the issue that I have is that the Islanders don't have a ton of forward prospects. So even if Bellows is kind of a tweener AHL, NHL guy, other than Wahlstrom, that's the closest forward prospect you have. You
trade him to get a legitimate winger.
You just be pushing it off a few years.
But you have Beauvillier on the wing, 22. You have your other wingers in Wahlstrom and like it's not like the core of the team is not so old that you can't replenish these prospects.
I you're right. And it's not like they aren't still drafting players and
right
as of the last couple of years. So you know people can come up, but it's just rare that they make and especially for the Islanders, that they have a Bellows and a Wahlstrom even on the roster.
William Four was a steal. Have you seen what he's been doing? I've been writing about
that's
it.
That's true. I mean, there are some players that are surprising that I'm hoping that can translate.
DeFore, for some reason, was projected to go anywhere between the second round and the fifth round of the draft. Right now, he is dominating the QMJHL and has absolutely nothing left to prove at that level. He is scoring at will. He's had multiple, I think he had a 7-game goal streak, missed a game, didn't miss a game, didn't score one game, but had 3 assists, and then went on another 10-game goal streak.
Yeah.
Didn't score, had a couple more assists, and then another goal. He is tearing it up.
I think they have
a good a scorer in DeFour.
I'll say this. If a trade does happen for Forsberg or somebody else for the top six, I will enjoy in the moment and not get ahead of myself and say, oh, I can't believe they gave up. I don't care. They get somebody and then they're going to help, just like Pajot last year.
Yeah.
I will look at it in a vacuum and say, this is good for right now. I will worry about next season and the future after this season.
Right.
Let's see what they can do.
And be confident that it works, right? Because, you know, we've been
have some confidence that they know what they're doing. And again, I think they're picky. And I wonder if a guy like Forsberg, and we've asked this question a million times on this show, what kind of player is actually going to work within the Trot system?
Yeah,
and that top six.
I don't see him not being, you know, part of the solution moving forward if they do, you know, move hit for him. He's only 26. He wears the A in Nashville. He's a leader. You know, I don't see any issues on the Forsberg front. So,
I mean, your point is well made. He's pretty much good for 20 goals a year. He's already got 8 in 17 games. So he's you know, he's yeah. So
five. And that's on a defensive minded team. Yes, albeit we are a defensive minded team as well. But again, he played with Ryan Johansson, who I haven't heard anything from him in 2 years in Nashville. Matt Duchene just can't figure it out anymore. You know, he's not playing with centers at the level of Barzal.
You're right. And like I said, I think if they can at least, you know, a year after this one, you hope that they can make a deal. You don't want them too far after 32 years old, and you wonder if you'll only take a 3-year deal.
4 years.
Something like that. I mean, you're pretty much guaranteeing that, you know, after 32, 33, he's going to fall off the map.
Yep.
But, you know, it would kind of be like if the Islanders snagged Hoffman. You know, he's a, you know, perennial 20, 30 goal guy. He's a little older. You still want him in the lineup for a few years. He'd be great next to this guy. I don't think he's quite the sniper that Hoffman is, but maybe he's better at a two-way game than Hoffman is. And he can. I wonder what that lineup looks like if you who you move around.
And now I'm going to leave you with a cliffhanger for maybe not next week's episode, but an episode that we will probably get to at some point, likely next offseason. If the Islanders don't acquire a sniper at the trade deadline this season, will Alex Ovechkin be available and will the Islanders go after him because of the Barry Trotz connection? Find out on Nesman Hockey Podcast in sometime this future. Thanks to everybody who's listening to the podcast right now. Thank you to the Hockey Podcast Network, the Hockey Writers, and of course, each and every one of you at this moment. Make sure to check out Amity Harbor Sports and Long Island Hockey Company. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to or watch the show. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Nassiman Hockey and find our work at The Hockey Writers. You can also check out our Patreon to support the show and get access to our weekly newsletter, additional articles, and bonus episodes. Until next time, everybody, let's go Islanders.